Welcome back to another episode of Black Friends Dinner. It's me, your host, your resident non-binary bae, Nandi K. And we're back at Black Friends Dinner, where we navigate what all Black Lives Matter mean in a world where they don't, over food and drink. I'm super, super excited about my guest today. We're talking about all things hip-hop. And it's the new year. Happy New Year, y'all. Our first guest is Kiera Leon. Welcome. I got it, boo. I understood it right away. Kiera Leon is filled with 90s nostalgia. She happens to be in charge of thinking of things before either other people know they need them. In other words, she's psychic, but not really. Me too, boo. As she begins to exit her 20-something, she applies all the skills she's acquired while adulting to manifest the foundation of her custom career in music and entertainment. Welcome, Miss Kiera Leon. And Sir Cozy, welcome. Yo. Happy to have you. It's one third and creator of the Run the Tape podcast, New York's premier podcast dedicated to music discovery, focusing on some of the best the city has to offer. Hailing from Brooklyn by way of Europe and the Mid-Atlantic, he's a subscriber to all things of the culture and the progression of Black women and our patriarchal society, and an ambassador of the cancel movement. Holla, he's preaching right here in this bio. Aside from that, he's a content director for Bass New York, an emerging creative agency focusing on merging the hipsters with the cultural influencers and those you need to know. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
So happy to have y'all. So happy to have a panel of hip-hop experts. As always, it's always about the food over here. So today, I made kind of like a slow cooker, jambalaya type situation. You know, it's cold and like my crock pot is, I could been cooking everything in the crock pot because you said
I still
it,
haven't bought one.
Forget it.
That's the way to go.
I've been slacking on that.
Listen, if you like to cook things that take a long time, but you don't have a lot of time, a crock pot is for you. Mm-hmm. We need a crock pot sponsor. Now that I'm thinking about it, put that in the notes. So I'm from the South. I grew up on soul food. I eat chitlins. Don't judge me.
I haven't tasted them yet.
You haven't? But I always like to ask my guests, you know, what is soul food to you? What is your favorite dish? Who makes it?
Oh, man. I guess like having such a diverse background, I grew up in a West Indian community. So for me, you know, my first foray into what soul food is probably West Indian Jamaican food for me. I mean, I have a soft spot for like oxtails, you know, really soft spot for that. Spicy too. As far as the States, I mean, you know, I've been to so many different, I've been a part of so many different, you know, Black cultures, Black families, and I've been able to taste all different types of cooking. So to me, it's just one of those situations where it's just about soul food. It's just about bringing people of our culture together, you know, over. And the great thing about it is that everybody brings a little bit of piece of their family into the mixture as well. So when you go to a function, somebody's going to bring their potato salad, which is their mother's or their grandmother's recipe. So you're bringing their history into the fold, and you bring your mac and cheese that you learned from your grandmother, your mother. So everybody's culture across the board is represented as well. So, I think soul food is not just about cuisine. To me, it's also an ideology. It really lays the foundation for people to connect over something that brings us all together.
What about you, Miss Kiera?
I relate to him on a lot of things, especially with the just being familiar with a lot of different types of foods.
Yeah,
you know.
Of course.
But for the most part, soul food to me is just tradition. Like I grew up on it.
Yeah.
You know, my family, most of my family is from like the South, so. Mm. I just grew up on everything. I smell chitlin, you know. I know a lot of people who eat them. It's just that, you know, not an immediate
thing.
You know, but I've like my favorite. So my favorite thing, it has to be macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, I feel like that kind of goes across the board.
Because
for
one, I've tried to go vegan. You know, I always say I'm 65% vegan because I do whatever I want to do. I don't really like abide by the rules, but for the most part I do like you know, how it makes me feel when I don't have meat in my diet. Mm-hmm. So I do go meatless for periods of time mm-hmm. to just, you know, get my mental together. But for the most part, you know, I'm a sucker for
mac and cheese.
Mac and cheese, fried chicken, yams, everything. Yeah, like, my favorite.
Fried chicken is my favorite food, but for soul food. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it's like, especially like when you get to experience a bunch of Black cultures, because every Black culture has like their own soul food. So right. like, the first time I had like trendy macaroni pie, it's very different mm-hmm. than like traditional like exactly. Black American mac and cheese. But is it still mac and cheese? Yes. Mm-hmm. It's still real good too.
Like. And soul food is also just something I feel like a cuisine that you take your time with, a meal that you take your time with.
Yeah.
Like, I love food. Like, I love homemade food. Yes. Like, nothing beats that. Like, I just don't understand how people can eat out every night. You know, every night, I can't do it. Like, it's I would go crazy. I'm not saying I haven't gone a week just eating mm-hmm. out, you know, but people who just don't taste soul food. Like, I've seen kids away at college who just didn't understand it.
Yeah,
you know, like, you're cooking, like, food, if you're on the stove, you shouldn't be there for more than 10, 15 minutes. No.
Excuse me. What?
And I went to a PWI, so.
I went to a PWI, too.
Yeah, you got to share kitchens and stuff.
We was cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We was cooking.
But yeah, that's my, you know, my whole take on food. I love all kinds of food. My palate is very wide.
Open.
Like, yeah, very open, yeah.
Word. Wide. So, yeah, so I'm really excited. The crock pot is ready. Food is ready. I'm ready for y'all to try it. But before we get into all that, it's time to get into my least favorite / favorite part of the show, Today in White History, where we basically just talk about where white people are fucking up. And this past week, I like to turn my attention to Ellen DeGeneres because, girl, we let you dance all in public. We was like, oh, she on beat, you know? And then you bring this nigga, Kevin Hart, on your show to not apologize yet again. And then you accept an apology on behalf of a community that you're not a part of. So let's go back a little bit. In the past few weeks, Kevin Hart was announced as the host of the Oscars. And literally in less than 24 hours, homophobic tweets that he posted from about 8 to 10 years ago resurfaced. They're pretty violent. How he would put a doll head over his son's head if he saw him playing with dolls. He has a little bit in Seriously Funny where he's like, whenever you see your kid having a gay moment, you got to nip it in the bud. And as a queer person myself, that shit just ain't funny. Like, it's especially Black people. Like, there's literally people dying behind these jokes. More and more, we're seeing stories of 8-year-olds and 10-year-old boys getting beat to death by their parents or guardians because they think that these little boys are gay. So, first, I just wanna kind of get you guys' opinion on Kevin Hart's apologies in air quotes in the past, and then how do you feel about Ellen kind of accepting an apology on her show?
I feel like with Ellen, I'll start with her. Mm-hmm. I feel like she felt it was her job, at like especially with her platform that she has. Mm-hmm. Like, she finds people on New York subway stations and gives them $10,000. Yeah, you know, boys I've been seeing doing this for 20, not 20, I'm lying. I'm guys at it. You know, like 5 and 6 years, you know what I'm saying? And you get them on. So for somebody who's a fellow comedian like right. herself, you know, she is a big name. I believe she's hosted the Oscars before.
She has.
You know, I feel like it was her, I feel like she felt it was her job. And as just her, for her profile, whether she wanted to do it or not. Because that's another thing too. I'm sure she has to do things that she probably doesn't want to do.
I find that know? Very hard to believe. Especially because she's a white woman with a show named after her, and
true,
she's
but a barrier a lot of breaker. But there are a lot of strings behind closed doors.
I'm not saying
you know?
There's not strings. I think. Yeah. Why do you think that she thought it was her job?
I think that because she's become the preeminent like ambassador of the LGBTQ community in terms of the spotlight. she's been able, like you said, she's been able to break barriers, and she's been able to go to certain places and bridge gaps. And that's why I can see where Kira is coming from, where she feels like it's her responsibility to continuously bridge those gaps, whether it's politically correct or a touchy situation also. Do I believe that Kevin Hart was wrong for what he said? Absolutely. I mean, it was foolish. It was foolish content. I do understand, as a comedian, no subject can be taboo. You do feel like you can't shy away from certain things because, you know, because you're afraid of the political climate. Right. You know, even look at, you know, Dave Chappelle, you know, Chappelle Show.
Completely
look at
agree.
The Boondocks. You know, like we those are some of our funniest moments that we remember, and they were all types of pervasive, all types of disrespectful, all types
It's interesting to me because I don't feel, I think about like the episode of the Boondocks where, is it when it's Thug, it's not Thugnificent, Gangstalicious, who is a gay rapper, right?
Word.
Or closeted gay rapper. There's a really great episode of the Boondocks where Gangstalicious started this clothing line. Riley is wearing like half shirts and skorts and pearls and a bag, you know, and he's like, it's not gay, right? Because he just doesn't believe that Gangstalicious is gay. And it's super funny, but it's not homophobic. Right. It's having an open conversation about a closeted gay rapper is not the same as saying, I'll drop a dollhouse on my kid's head if I find him playing with dolls.
I also believe that Ellen is a forgiving person.
Very.
Like, she's a forgiving person. I think that's the problem people have with her, of how forgiving she is, you know? And that she was able to forgive Kevin Hart for not apologizing.
For something that didn't affect her.
And with him, I feel, back to Kevin Hart, he feels like he's apologized already.
I'll read his quote in a second.
He has said that he's apologized multiple times, and there's a lot of really since he said he's apologized, because the first thing he said was, his first response to the tweets coming back up were, I'm happy and there's nothing you can do about it, take your negativity elsewhere. That was his first response. Which
That's a bad response. That was the deleted one. That's the video that he posted initially.
That's not a good response to say that people are just trying to drag up negativity. So when this happened, he said that he had already apologized. When in fact, what he said was, and it was in another interview, a printed interview, he said, I wouldn't do that joke again because the times are too sensitive. Now, when did he apologize? When he said he was stepping down from the Oscars. However, the Oscar said, apologize or step down. He chose not to apologize. He stepped down. And this is all documented. He made videos about this himself. You can find them on his Instagram. He said, the Oscar said, apologize or step down. He said he's not apologizing. Then he stepped down and then apologized. Okay, so then Don Lemon speaks on the subject. Don Lemon, man, that man's had a transformation. He knows all about growth. Like, Don Lemon is the nigga who was in Ferguson basically calling black people criminals for protesting. And we have seen a huge turnaround in Don Lemon from that New Year's when he was drunk on CNN. He knows all about growth.
Yeah, he's definitely done a brand 360.
Huge brand name 360. Don Lemon responded to Kevin Hart and said, you know, you didn't really apologize, but now that you have, growth is about like showing like an actual, like, you haven't partnered with any like LGBT groups. You haven't like made yourself like a queer ally.
Active.
You haven't made yourself active. So we can't really see that you've grown by you just saying, the times are too sensitive and I won't do that.
You haven't really showed anything. You've just been talking.
Exactly. So today, Kevin Hart responded and said that being an ally is not his life's work. He doesn't want to be forced to be an ally to LGBT people. You know,
I feel like it's very push and pull with this situation.
Yeah, like, I mean, the internet's vicious.
And I just think, for the most part, man. Oh.
I think that you have to be careful. I mean, I understand that, you know, they're looking for some type of retribution, that they want him to make penance and they want some level of atonement for him to kind of immerse himself. Basically, what I'm getting from Don is that he wants Kevin to immerse himself in a culture to become more empathetic. And
I don't think immerse himself in a culture is necessary, well, but he does want them to become more empathetic.
I think in order to do that, like, for example, you know, if there's somebody, if you have a bigot, right, and you want that bigot, well, you don't really give a fuck whether the bigot, you know, changes his colors or not. But if you have an interest in that person developing a different perspective, you do kind of require that person to become a part of the culture, though, because in that immersion, the person comes out on the other end. It's almost like a baptism. They have to get into the water. Like, you have to dunk and you have to come out. You have to come out a different person. So what he's saying is, I'm not saying that he wants him at all the pride events or whatever.
Right.
But whether it being partnering up, whether starting a foundation, whether it being just brand alignment, something, or even opening up an opportunity for the different creatives from the LGBT community to be given a platform. He just wants to show a faith that he really genuinely and sincerely meant what he said when he apologized. I think that the society that we live in right now, however, is very trigger happy. You know, as soon as... I think that the sensitivity has, like, reached, like, an all-time high. Everybody wants their demographic to be respected, represented across the board. Yeah. And the LGBT community is no different from that. And they deserve the utmost respect. And as a father of a son, I can understand, in a way, what he's saying. But at the same time, I also understand, like, but bro, like, the platform that you're on, the platform, like, I can say, like, I'm not saying I would say it, but like, I can say it, and it's like a tree falling in the woods
and no one's there.
You saying it, and like, people are going to take, and people don't understand that, like, celebs like to pick and choose and kind of measure their level of power. Mm-hmm. When I speak, people should be able to discern between what's fact and what's fiction, what's my opinion and what's law. No, there are people who will take your word and say, this is it. This, by decree, Kevin Hart has said X, Y, and Z. So this is it. And people, I understand people don't see themselves like that, and they don't want to look at themselves like that because there's a certain level of hubris that comes with that.
Yeah, of course.
Nobody wants to admittedly own that. But at the same time, people will give it to you, whether you want it or not.
The internet does not go away, y'all.
People will give you your devotion, their devotion, whether you ask for it or not. Mm. And so you are to be held accountable because you have a certain level of power that comes with that fame. And you have to use it wisely. You have to just watch your words. I know it's tough and you have to tweak your routine a bit differently and you have to accommodate a bit differently. I get it. You know, now you have to be cognizant of the Black community. Now you have to be cognizant of the woman community.
Yeah.
Now you have to be cognizant of the binary community.
Yeah,
like you have to just, but that's very because true. People are beginning to understand and develop more about themselves. And as we develop more about, you know, as we begin to understand a little bit more about ourselves, we begin to understand our trigger points a little bit more too. More trigger points begin to come up that weren't necessarily there in the 90s and in the 80s.
That's very true. I think that learning in public is something that, like, celebrities really have to do now, especially even in the past 5 years, the way language has just changed so much. It's hard to keep up.
Yeah. And learning as you go. I had to learn it out. Because for me, I am a perfect person who identifies as non-homophobic. You know, I'm straight, but I'm very... Like, I'm not discriminative to other people.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? No matter what the other is. You know what I'm saying? And I have a particular friend who I've seen her transition from male to binary, non-binary to she.
Yeah.
And it took me time, and I was with her through all transitions. Mm-hmm. And I remember one time we was at brunch, and she was sitting next to me, and we were talking, and this was like one of our first like real in-depth, like intimate conversations. And I was like, I'm not sure what to call you. Are you comfortable with he, they? And she said, I'm non-binary, so it doesn't really matter. I said, oh, okay. And that was my first time learning about non-binary.
Right.
And then maybe a year passed and she was she. You know what I'm saying? And it took me time to understand that because of the conversation I had with her prior.
Yes, of course.
So I didn't know what the difference was. And then, you know, as I, if anything, just stood back and just observed her, I understood, you know? Like, and that's another thing, too. Sometimes certain things are not to fully be spoken about. You just kind of have to really fall back and then speak, you know, like it's not automatic. You need to answer now. You don't need to answer right now.
That you touched on, Cozy, saying you don't have to really immerse yourself, but you have to get in the water. Right. And so one thing that Don Lemon said is this is the time to listen to folks in the LGBT community, especially Black folks. Because he's Black, we're Black. I could care less about what the white people are doing in their communities. But like Kevin Hart, it's like he has this platform. But learning in public is very hard because every mistake you make is documented.
Do we feel like Ellen, there's been such a backlash on Ellen being the spokesperson for his, you know, pardon? Because even though she's a representative of the LGBT community, is she a representative of the Black LGBT community?
And I think that's where a big amount, from what I saw on social media, from everything I saw from the backlash that she received, it is, Ellen, you're gay and all, but this isn't about you. And it's not. It's easy to apologize and forgive someone who made a statement that in no way, shape, or form affects you. Very easy to be like, I forgive you, Kevin Hart. I'm a white lesbian. Your statements really didn't apply to me at all. You know, that's very easy for her to do. But for Black gays, we're like, damn, nigga, why don't you just say you're sorry?
And that's kind of where Don Lemon kind of comes in.
Yeah. And right. Don Lemon, I thought, was a perfect person because that is someone who most Black people couldn't fucking stand 4 years ago. Like, four years ago, Don Lemon was a completely different person.
Oh, my God.
And he has actually shown and grown in his actions and his words and using his platform to be like, I fucked up and the shit I was saying back then is wrong, but now I'm going to say the right thing. And what we see with Kevin Hart is someone who's like, I just want to move on. I don't want to keep talking about this. I don't want to keep apologizing. Yeah, it's like, you know, your words
still carry. It's about accountability.
It's definitely a lot of elitism with Kevin Hart.
For sure.
You know, because when I feel like even with, when it comes to consequences, I feel like the more power, respect, and money you have, the more untouchable you feel, or the more just,
but we know, more
privilege
money, more
you
problems.
Have, you know, like you privilege you expect. Mm-hmm. I feel like he expected himself to go on Ellen and to be all good and clear because he was on Ellen's show. And it's like the LGBTQ community was like, fuck out of here. No, we're not
accepting
this.
We're not rocking with Ellen like
that's
that.
Because he doesn't know the culture, he doesn't understand that mm-hmm. going on Ellen is not the cosign of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's
exactly.
the cosign mm-hmm. of her demographic, but you still are answerable to your people.
And that's where you came from.
And mm-hmm. that's where Don comes in because, all right, cool, you made the white people happy, but that's not enough.
Right.
Because it's layers. When you're a black man, there's layers to it. Not mm-hmm. only are you homophobic, but at the same time, or expressing homophobic, you know, ideology, you're also a black man. Mm-hmm. And you're not protecting your brother and sister. Mm-hmm. And you're also kind of stifling the growth of mm-hmm. little children around you as well. And you're not setting the right example for people who come to your shows who may go home and have a child who's struggling between, you know, what's acceptable and what's not. And that, and this may put that parent over the edge. This may be the straw that broke the camel's back and helps them understand like what I'm doing is right, because there's a person on the elite level who co-signs my sentiments.
Yeah, white adjacency is a very interesting thing, and I think that that's something that Kevin Hart has been enjoying a lot of. Every white people love Kevin Hart. They think Kevin Hart is so funny. White people keep Kevin Hart with a job. Even the notion that he would go on to Ellen to do this, right, shows like kind of where he is right now in his career and in like the world that he's in. Even when he had this recent beef with Cat Williams, and one of the main things I remember him saying is Cat Williams always wants to blame the white man. And to me, as a black person, I mean, I'm not famous or rich, but I know from reading books that it is kind of all the white man's fault. And there's a lot of reasons where you can almost always blame the white man. And especially Cat Williams is pretty outspoken about racism, even in his stand-up. That's kind of something that Kevin Hart never touches. Like, he doesn't touch those subjects. He says stuff like, Oprah never talks about racism. Yeah, Oprah is a billionaire. She's mad white adjacent. People don't even know that Oprah's black anymore because she's so rich. And to me, him going on that show is just all about his white adjacency and appealing to his white adjacency to somehow receive absolution in the black community. But that is kind of based on the fact that thinking that black people look to white people for that kind of approval. And I think that the black community has shown them that that is not it, Chief. This episode of Black Friends Dinner is sponsored by Kasvari Made It. Black-owned, women-owned, handmade greeting cards, books, enamel pens, and mugs straight to your door. Find them at Kasvari Made It on Instagram and at KasvariMadeIt.com. So we're back from dinner.
Dinner was good.
We're fine.
Very good.
Spicy.
Yes, yeah,
I think I want some more though. It. Not right this second, of course. Yeah, because you get ASMR.
I'm gonna do the soul food takeout box.
Yeah, word. No, I'm happy to do it because there's so much left.
I mean, I know we just to recap soul food. So etiquette of to go. So me, I don't even bring. I don't ask you for plates. I bring Tupperware.
Oh, you bring your own.
I bring my own shit. Like, that's so very cool. Real. Like, I'm not gonna make you waste your resources. Of course like you, not. You know,
that's
like
very
I'm
fair.
Gonna bring. I'm gonna. This is my contribution to the festivities. I'm gonna
your
bring
preparedness.
I'm gonna bring my shit. Preparedness. Bring my shit. I'm gonna pack my shit. And I'm gonna wash my shit, bro. So you don't gotta do no work.
You are such a great guest.
I try to be.
You deserve an award. What's your birthday?
Virgo.
I knew it.
Oh, that's why.
Virgo.
That's why.
What day? 12.
Hey, okay. September.
So Virgo gang. September gang.
Listen, Sean's a Virgo. I'm a Sagittarius. I have some amazing Virgos emo
gods,
in my life.
As I tend to say, we have the emo gods.
Man.
I'm a Cancer.
But don't tell y'all that because
I take it, man. I take my
y'all
Jake-ness.
Don't have emotions.
I take my Jake-ness. I'm with it.
All right, so today I was super excited to have some hip hop experts on today because it's the beginning of the year and I feel like it's a perfect time to recap 2018.
Crazy
the hip hop of game, the game of hip hop, and kind of talk about what we want to see next. Like, it's changed. I want to get into the good changes, the bad changes, what we're happy about, what we hate. And the question is, did hip hop make the Instagram star? Like, that is the title of the episode today. So first, does anyone, do either one of y'all want to take on a brief history of hip hop, its origins, and then we'll kind of talk about now?
Yeah, man. To my knowledge, you know, hip hop started off as, I mean, like you had disco rap, right, that, you know, where the origins came from, and the subject matter was obviously a little bit more palatable to you know, the politically correct. And then in the 1980s, you know, there was a different, well, actually later 1970s into early 1980s, hip-hop was really started as a way of expression of the struggles within the Black community, and it was also meant as a way to kind of keep, you know, it was like the center of parties. It genuinely, you know, it wasn't really even about dancing. It wasn't about getting dubs. It wasn't about getting, like, it was about the, you know, yeah, exactly, like different forms. So from DJing to b-boying to graffiti to MCing, like, it was just across the board a movement. Whereas now, like, hip hop is more so just a genre of music. Whereas before, like, there was a certain culture, all encompassing culture, started off by some greats, whether it be Kool Herc, Afrika Bambaataa. You also had, oh man, you also, so many Grand people. Yeah, like, you have so many contributors to the game. So they started this culture and this movement, and it's just evolved so much within, I think, like, the period between like the mid 80s, and granted, I was born in the late 80s, and obviously I don't know what the fuck was going on, but when I look back from a historical fact and just listen to the catalog of music, the evolution from like 86 to like 96 is some of the best music, like, rap wise, like, almost ever created.
It's like the iconic,
like, that's like a period, yeah, of. Because that, like, that was the last pure, to me, where it's at its purest essence. And you have people discovering things, finding out what's working, what's not working. You have their, you know, you from Rakim to Kool Moe Dee, Big Daddy Kane, LL Cool J. And you also have, like, commercial hip hop was just about being raw, Run DMC. Yeah. Not to even mention, the, like, the New York scene that was, like, so present in the culture and in the game. So, but that, those first 10 years, that's special shit. Like, really where it began to take off. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things that really stood out to me was kind of like how, like, Kool Herc's sister was the one who really threw the party that, like, started it all. And he got most of the credit, you know? And it's kind of like, damn, like, women been going hard for hip hop since day one, and still we are overlooked, you know? So, and this is 40 something years later, you know, it's like, damn, you know? So it's kind of like, we still have a lot more work to do. And you can see that in just the transitions from the 90s to the early 2000s, right, you know, from just how can I say, just how things have gotten watered down. You're not here, like, the once respected boom bap, it's not existent in a club. Wow. How dare you ask for some boom bap in a club? They will fucking kick you out the club. Wow. The DJ will laugh you out the room. Go up to, go to your freaking, what club out there? Some club. I don't do clubs. I don't know.
Right now, like, in light of all these changes, who is making the good stuff right now? You know, who's popular right now? Drake is just as popular as he's ever been. The Migos, wildly popular. I mean, I don't listen to a lot of their music, but damn, those niggas are famous. Yeah, like, it's holy a vibe. Shit.
It's a vibe.
You know, clearly a lot of people fucking with them. People like, Meek Mill is back in the mix. Him and Drake made Pass a truce.
Yep.
They're besties again. Yep. So who do y'all think is making the good stuff right now?
I want to say Meek. I definitely think so. His last album,
I like that little Dangerous.
It's really good. It's a very unskippable album. But yeah, Meek. And then if you have people that's just consistently doing that you probably don't hear every day, that I support full 100%, Lay Kelly.
Yeah, dope.
Lay Kelly 47.
Yes.
That is my best friend in my head, okay?
Conditioner. Yes. And pro style. And pro style. Yo. That, I love her. She's from Jersey.
Oh. Yeah. She reps different places, though, like Jersey, Brooklyn, and Virginia.
Wow.
I think she was at college in Virginia because she reps a lot of. No, I think she went to Howard. She reps Howard really heavy.
Really? Yeah, I don't know. I heard that she was from New Jersey.
Yeah.
I heard she was out of Brooklyn. But I guess that.
She might have moved around here.
Yeah,
though,
she's around a lot. Yeah. East Coast.
She's super dope. I just think that. Especially in light of like all the stuff going on with female rappers, she's just quietly making bops.
Yeah, and doing her thing. She needs to do. And it's so, how can I say, from the ground up. Like, I've organically watched and listened to her because I heard her first, and I'm like, I think Jay-Z shouted her out on one of his playlists.
Oh, wow.
And then she got a little bit more room, and then I started seeing her, and I'm like, well, not really seeing her because you can't really see her, but the mask and all that.
But
other
that
stuff.
Brand is fire too, though.
Yeah.
That approach is dope.
Like a female.
She reminds me like
Doom. What's his?
That's what I was about to say. MF Doom, dope. Who actually would be like one of my favorite rappers of all time.
Amazing.
But you know that I think that's dope. Like her being able to, whereas most women in the industry are trying to showcase everything they are, and that being a part of their appeal to the masses. That there's a woman MC out there that is saying, you know what, like I genuinely, while women may want to say I don't want my physicality to be a substitute for my creativity, she's saying like I'm not even gonna give you the choice.
Mm-hmm.
Like I am who I am. Like you don't know what I look like, what my body look like. You know, all you got is my silhouette.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to let the music kind of flesh the rest out for you.
And she holding on strong to it, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she's great.
Just came out with a second album, so she's doing what she needs to do.
Yeah. Well, who do you like?
Oh, man. I better get the fucking Bible scroll ready. out of up top, I'll say Griselda, the Griselda Crew, West Side Gun, Benny the Butcher, Conway the Machine. My man Quality out of Brooklyn, Chris Casanova, Vinny Chase out of Harlem, the ASAP crew is doing what they need to do right now. I mean, Ferg is really holding it down right now. Rocky,
I've been liking their stuff. I wasn't a big fan at first.
They had a
I'm Southern,
they had a crazy,
so I felt a way about them kind of like trying to
taking
bite
the style
South
a little bit. I get
I felt like they were biting a little, but now as they get older, they're like kind of getting more into their artistry.
Into their own
I'm a
thing.
Big fan now.
So they're doing some creative shit right now. Man, Midwest is really my soft spot. I mean, from No Name to Chance the Rapper,
Mick Jenkins.
I was gonna interrupt you with Mick Jenkins.
Yeah, Mick Jenkins is doing what he needs to do right now. Saba, one of my favorite artists.
So great.
Yeah, you know, Midwest is really coming alive again. I know that they had a great period, the Kanye period. He kind of had a movement, but John Legend, Tony Williams, GLC, like, you know, that was a strong lineup. You know, down south is a given. 21 Savage is really like somebody that I really adopted, and the Young Thug is really two artists that I've come to appreciate a little bit more than I have in the past. Migos is there.
I got
21 Savage.
A Boogie. A Boogie and Don Q doing
that new 21 Savage album is
fire.
I just don't
he just
even
calmly,
like him.
And he like,
he was rocking, right?
Yeah.
He like calmly, and he like calmly dropped that album.
Mm-hmm.
Like it wasn't
very
even like
calmly.
He just was like, oh, I forgot. Like he even said it like December 7th. He tweeted, oh, my fault, y'all. By the way, I forgot to drop my album. And then like we all thought he was like jokes. But then like out of nowhere, like a week later, he drops, you know, I Am Greater Than I Was, which is an amazing, you know, amazing concept for an album as far as the title. But he's really emerged
and just
as somebody.
Him too.
Him as a person. I've been following him. He's been doing some press with Genius, and he did a really great interview with Rob Markman, where he talks about, like, you know, a lot of the influences of his music. So Down South is definitely represented. They may be not like lyrical giants, but they're great for vibe music. They're great for, like, to me, expressive music, mm-hmm. where it's like it's not meant to be like over the head. You're meant to feel it a little bit more. So those are two artists that are really standing out. But the West Coast is a really special place right now. You know, like from Buddy to, you know, you have the whole TDE Kendrick movement.
Of course.
That's already special. Nipsey Hussle had arguably the album of the year last year and was kind of like snubbed by a lot of, like, you felt like a lot of people felt like he was snubbed.
I think a lot of people didn't give it a chance.
Yeah, probably because like he's not a household name.
I didn't listen to it, not because I don't like Nipsey Hussle.
I don't like his politics. And I get that.
I understand. I know that he's kind of had a few missteps.
I've really in terms had of to his hold political myself statements. Accountable of my music about like
absolutely
and how I listen to music. This
cancel
year.
Movement.
Yeah, I really was like, wow. I really
this year is
can't
definitely
do
the
it.
Cancel year. It, complete.
Yeah,
like
I just
this year from
really
here on out started canceling motherfuckers out this year.
I had to let go of people who like just engage in behaviors that are detrimental. Toxic basically. So I did not listen to the Nipsey Hussle album, even though I heard very good things.
Yeah, that was a very special project. Mm-hmm. Tyler the Creator.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
that great shit. You heard that
him at first.
That was crazy.
Yo, I couldn't stand Tyler's initial rap voice.
Yeah, it was different.
When he first came out, I just was not feeling it. Now,
and then Frank came along.
It didn't have anything to do with Frank because I still didn't like Tyler the Creator even after I love Frank Ocean.
I've been a fan of Tyler since
but
Bastard.
Earl Sweatshirt is really
yeah,
my dude
I anyway.
But Frank made me like Tyler though for some reason. I don't know. I opened up more to
didn't
Tyler.
Didn't convince
after
me, but said, then I liked what because I only cared about the solo stuff. Frank Ocean can make me like any song. That doesn't mean mm-hmm. that I'm going to go listen to a Tyler the Creator album, mm-hmm. but his past like two or three projects
have been special.
I've actively listened to them and they've been.
Flower Boy to me was
Cherry
like.
Cherry Bomb was so great. Yeah. Flower Boy was so great. I just, these like kids, I keep forgetting they're younger than me and I'm seeing them like grow in their art. And it's more stuff that I like. I like seeing people like grow into themselves. And I'm like, no wonder I didn't really like your stuff at first because you didn't really know what you were doing.
Now you have
now you have a
staple
real handle on it and you know mm-hmm. who you are and you're making this dope shit.
Speaking of staples, Vince Staples as well too is another
very
amazing
outspoken
artist.
Too.
So like now, I feel like our culture and our community has expanded because I just feel like we're back in a great place where, like in the 90s, all coasts and all regions are represented mm-hmm. by a certain style and their demographics are respected. The Midwest, down south, the left coast, you
Trap
know, our
finally
side.
Finally got the respect it deserves. Absolutely.
And it's been around.
Yeah, it's a lot of people out there, but you know who's stood the test of time? Mr. Aubrey Graham, Drake. Yeah.
Ten
and
years in. Ten.
Mm-hmm. Man, let me tell you, I went to a concert in 2008 for Thank Me Later. Wow. I used to love Drake.
Used?
That's one of my favorite
albums. That's a very
albums.
Key word.
I know, yeah.
Why is it used?
I just feel like he stopped growing as an artist. Like, I haven't seen... I always say I have, like, a signature. After Nothing Was the Same, Everything Was the Same.
Wow, that's a bar.
I literally say that every time people ask me.
You're a musician, right?
Yeah, I am a musician. Yeah, I'm a singer. I'm more of a neo soul kind of R&B.
And a songwriter?
Yeah, singer-songwriter.
Oh, there you go. That's why. You're good.
So I'm like, he didn't, it's just like he did that album and it was a great bop album. But then everything sounded like that.
Yeah,
and then
that.
It was hard to even differentiate between songs. And so I kind of gave up. But Drake never gives up. And so Drake, somehow the softest, most emotional rapper in the game, has brought back beef. So we started, we saw with Meek Mill and the back to back record. It's rumored that Drake rented a hotel room underneath or above Meek Mill's hotel room just to play back to back on repeat. That's a rumor. I can't confirm it, but apparently that is something that may have happened.
I believe it.
And this in 2018, that beef also came to Pusha T, and Drake even brought Kanye into the mess. So my question, is beef back?
Kanye brought himself into that
mess. Nah, I won't say like, I mean, it happens from time.
Yeah,
like, of course. Beef as we know it, no. Like, now it's different. Mm-hmm. You know, beef as we know it, and that has something to do with consumers as well. Mm. Before, you know, Jay-Z dropped that Jay-Z and Nas beef, there were months between responses. Like, you almost moved on in life before a response would like pull you right back into mm-hmm, the saga. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a certain anticipation to it that added to the value of the record. Whereas now there's a reverse.
Yeah, wait for your bootleg man.
Where people now see it as a detriment. Like, what do you hear when somebody drops? Like, even you as a listener, when you heard any diss, the first thing that you said to yourself was, "Yo, he got 48 hours." He or she got 48 hours.
Everybody is
looking for the immediate. There's no patience. Because the way that our industry is, there's
the
everything
internet.
Is on demand. The internet, social media, piracy across the board. The way that artists leak music right now and mm-hmm. they self-promote through their music.
Right.
So there's like, we're constantly being fed, and that doesn't stop with beef. So now you're programmed, and when someone drops a diss track on Monday, you know, Monday day, you're listening to it, and Monday night, you're expecting a response on Tuesday morning.
But, like, they can do it, I feel like. That's what
can,
I think
but,
makes like, me upset, is that this
lose.
Is even more possible than it was
absolutely
back in the day.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that's how I feel about that.
Oh, yeah. So he's on Drake, right?
Mm. Is beef back?
I feel like beef has always been. It's just on a, like, it all depends on the tier of beef.
Mm.
Like, there's certain tiers of it. There's a lot of independent beef.
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm on an independent scene and I see a lot of stuff. So I know how I can manifest in my head how the Drake and Meek could have went down.
Right.
Based on what happens in the independent scene, you know? Mm-hmm. And just how relationships are and just music, period. There's a lot of, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. If you don't scratch my back, you're my frenemy now.
Mm.
So I see you in public, we give hugs, but behind closed doors, let me so close up.
Yeah,
I get
mad
comfortable
New
and I start
York.
Getting passionate and I'll be everywhere. So, but
yeah.
Nah, like beef to me is just very, it comes with every territory you go into.
Right.
And when it comes to rap beef now, when on a mainstream scale, like what Cozy said, It's very on demand, online,
yeah.
Black Twitter, everybody's talking about it, you're trending, what do you do next? All your fans is hashtagging, the pressure's on, oh, my A&R or my father's buddy, he just told me I can't respond back, shout out to Jay Prince, like, you know, like that type of thing, you know, so it's now it's very secure, it's very guarded,
yeah.
So you have a lot of OGs in the game who don't want a Biggie and
Tupac
to happen, or who else?
I don't know if we have the capacity to get to that point.
I don't think that's even a thing anymore. Because I see Drake as like someone who's in a lot of beef, and like this is the age of the backpack rapper. Like street cred is just so not necessary anymore.
It's clout now,
and the few killers in the game, they're getting killed.
But no rappers are getting killed.
Like this, but I'm saying the real ones with like street cred, like as early hip hop as we know it. Well, gangster rap. Let me be more specific. The era of gangster rap. Those niggas was really gangsters. They wasn't rapping about nothing that they wasn't doing. They was selling drugs. They was beating up women. They was shooting niggas for real.
Being problematic.
Being problematic. But now, but thanks to Kanye West, now, thanks to Kanye West, who is like the prominent backpack rapper, niggas like Drake can have beef with niggas like Meek Mill, who is a real criminal.
Yeah,
it's
he's struggling, and I think that shows
how we cannot really get to a Biggie and Tupac level right,
there's always gonna be forces,
and that's why the security is there, because there are people like a Jay Prince who know and can see what it is already, who can foretell what the future holds, and my like he's like, yo Drake, listen to me, you don't want this. You don't want this.
Do not want that.
We don't want this. So for the squad, like,
but I don't think that. I mean, even if Drake released whatever said song he said that he had, I don't even know if the beef as two businessmen. I don't even think that they would even even have gotten to that point. I mean, granted, you know, Push, they did try to jump Pusha in Toronto. When he did his concert there, so
they,
you know,
throw
beef,
shit on him
they
too,
did
right?
throw you know shit on him, and that's cool, and I understand, but that's mostly fans.
Yeah,
people did say, you know, it was alleged that
Drake sent Joe Budden down the street.
He did, yeah. That shit was wild.
And that was hilarious. No, Joe Budden chased his fans down the street.
Facts. That shit was crazy.
That was.
Yeah, that shit. I can't.
History,
yo, watch that. Oh, watch that. God. Watch that video. Joe Budden chasing. I think it was three white boys or two white boys in the car,
Lord.
And they was throwing rock. He was like throwing rocks at the whip, and Joe was like running like full speed ahead down the block trying to get to that back the back of the
like
Prius.
He was running after that car.
I love Joe Budden.
His
that's my
is,
thing with hip hop though. That's my question. I'm like, where are the? I want to see the, like, and you know what it is? I feel like it's coming. It's just taking its time with the emergence of the hip hop commentators, like the new emerging,
new era, new school.
And I feel like it's coming. The memes. You know, I see it happening.
Basically.
I see it happening slowly.
It is happening.
You know, and
platforms like Genius really make it possible. What's the other lyric? Site that does.
I only know Genius. Only literally.
Maybe I'm thinking of Genius. But those who are doing like commentary, but that's very new. I really love Joe Budden's transition from rapper to like hip hop content commentator, and he really is a well of knowledge.
He's like a hip hop columnist. Like, he's like a column in itself. Every day,
he's an encyclopedia.
I get a notification on YouTube. I have a, like, Joe Budden has a new video. Whether I'm subscribed to the shit or not.
He's super smart. He really knows what he's talking about. I do feel like, for the most part, he presents as much of an unbiased opinion as possible, for the most part.
Yeah.
I think he tries to present a really, you know, objectionable opinion. And I love his transition to like hip hop guru from rapper. And I think he's, I can't wait to see more people do that. I can't wait. That's such a new space that things like podcasts like this and your podcast, Run the Tape, do is like, it's like creating a new job for people whose past talent was like being a hip hop artist and being in the hip hop industry. So, kind of getting back to talking a little bit about how the hip hop industry has changed and beefs, I want to talk a little bit about my favorite beef of 2018, Nicki Minaj and Cardi B.
Yeah, that was not. I don't think I would call that a beef. That was like.
It wasn't. That was trolling.
That was David versus. That was trolling. That was that was definitely capping. A lot of cap. Too much cap. just Nikki, aka New Poke Era
Insecurity.
Man, Shorty was
she was on one.
She was on one
or
man.
Two or like, three or
how does she? She got a show in Queen Radio. Mm-hmm. It beats one major platform, crazy super bag probably, and you use that to. First off, use that to like promote yourself, mm-hmm. which I find that to be weird because usually when you give an artist a platform that's not native to what they normally do, they normally like to kind of use that to showcase a different side of who they are as a person. I feel like Queen Radio does nothing for her because all she does is takes a persona that she has in rap and applies it in podcasting and radio.
I just want to give a little background on Queen Radio. So basically how that whole situation worked is that when you release an album on Apple Music, sometimes they give you a podcast for a month, like Frank Ocean's Blonde at Radio. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it might go on a little longer, but it's really up to the artist. You get it for a month and... that's what you get when you release an album with Apple Music. Basically, Nicki Minaj just kept showing up every day. Mm. And that's real facts.
And bringing people with her.
And bringing people with her. Even like
fans.
Like Master Flex.
Random people. Yeah. And random people like fans. Like, have you seen MTV?
Your face right
Catfish?
Now, Cozy, is everything.
She brought one of the Catfish participants onto her show because they were her fan. She did.
This is real life facts. I hope Nicki Minaj hears this. She won't, but it would be great if she
messing
would
with
respond.
Her, she's kind of like crazy.
She
I
has
like she's
time,
like
it seems.
Yeah.
She has mad time. Whole bunch of time.
Yeah, so that's the deal with Queen money. Radio. So just a little detail, just a quick little, timeline of their beef.
You good.
I'm laughing so hard. I'm like choking back laughter because it really was like the most entertaining thing that happened last year for me. June 2017, Cardi B joins Remy Ma at the Summer Jam. Y'all know the Remy Ma and Nicki Minaj beef.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Nicki ever really responded. She took that I'm going to get money response, which is no response at all.
No
August 2017, Nicki denies a sub on No Flags. In August 2017, Nicki Minaj appeared on London the Track single No Flags alongside Cardi's boo Offset and 21 Savage. On it, she rapped the following verse, which was actually, I can't rap.
Just say it.
I'm just gonna say it. But this is the verse. Little bitch, I heard these labels trying to make another me. Everything you get it. You're so mean.
You're so
You start over. Cause the way she little bitch.
It's just when I say bitch because I'm country, I just can't help it. I just say it in a certain way. Little bitch, I heard these labels trying to make another me. Everything you get in little hoe is cause of me. I heard I'm stocking bags. Word to Shaggy, it wasn't me. These bitches is my sons, but they daddy ain't bussing me. I'm a white picket fence bitch. You on the bench, bitch. See me in the gym. Now these bitches want to go bench press. I ain't fucking with you, sis. We ain't with the incest. Yes, I am the queen. I'm still trying to find a princess.
Ooh.
Mm. So people,
yeah. When you say little bitch, you remind me of Big Sean.
Little bitch.
Yeah.
Little bitch.
Quite. The
I love his little bitch.
Little bitch. Yeah,
his
it's because I'm country.
Yeah.
So people were saying that verse was about Cardi B. Nicki said it wasn't. She tweeted, "It sure ain't." Wrote this a couple months ago too. September 2017, Cardi is featured on No Limit and denies the beef on The Breakfast Club. Cardi says there's no beef. September 25th, 2017, Cardi makes history with the number one song, Bodak Yellow. All right. So this is when it really starts getting dicey right here, because no one, I don't think I knew that Cardi B was going to blow up like that.
Nobody did.
Yeah. It was like shot in the dark, kind of like that's how I felt. I was like, she could either do it, but I was like, anybody who goes in Love and Hip Hop, they don't blow up. But when she decided to walk away, I was like,
Here's the background about Cardi and Love and Hip Hop. Love and Hip Hop approached Cardi. She already had a huge following on social media. Mm-hmm. She was kind of big news bears, and they asked her to be on the show. Mm-hmm. They asked her. Mm-hmm. She didn't audition.
Mm-hmm. She had millions of views.
She was like, already doing was pretty lit. Good. And I started watching Love and Hip Hop when Cardi B was on the show. That was my first time ever even watching it, because I was on TV not watching.
That's what's up.
Kind of situation. And I loved her personality. I just thought she was super funny. And she never told lies. It didn't seem like she told any lies. She was always just like, my tooth is chipped, I don't give a fuck, look at my new titties. I thought she was very funny. And then Bodak Yellow dropped, and I'm like, damn, she's really making them respect her music, because you watch her on the show running around basically begging these men to play her music mm-hmm. on the radio. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're all like, whatever, Cardi, you're a stripper. And then Bodak Yellow happens. October 2017, Migos drops Motorsport featuring Nicki Minaj and Cardi B. I love that record, except for Nicki Minaj's part, where she repeats China a lot of times. What team were you on and why?
Cardi, easy. Like, for one, I never was a big Nicki fan. I never was. She grew on me because of like Friends and radio. But for the most part, I wasn't into the whole Barbie look. I wasn't into that whole phase.
I was very much into it when she first came out.
Yeah. So I was very, when she first came out, I was very resistant of her. And because I didn't like the sexualization of her.
Over-sexualization.
Yeah. Over-sexualization.
I was a fan.
And it was kind of a turnoff until her album came out, and I was like, oh, she's talented. Like, she's really, really talented.
Well, I mean,
she's not just mixtape talented. Okay. You get what I'm saying? To me, unpopular opinion, I feel like Fabulous is very mixtape talented. He has one album that I truly, truly loved. That's when he had the blue coat on an album, on album cover.
Street
that's what
Dreams.
I remember. Yes, oh, boom, yeah, there we go. But that that's my comparison to her in the beginning. And then I heard her album and I loved it. And then that's when I supported her. And then this happened. And I'm like, girl, what are you doing?
But a lot happened between like when you started, like when Nicki came into the scene to the emergence of Cardi. I mean, Nicki had two albums that had dropped between her time. Plus her foray with Young Money and her starting so many different lines.
American
Nicki,
Idol.
So Nicki had a lot of time to herself. She had a stage to herself for a while. And that's because obviously, women who were artists but of a darker color were marginalized and pushed aside.
Right.
Because that's not to say that Nicki is the only talented. She's just the only one that's being presented to you as the only option. Which is the problem with the industry right now today when it comes to women who are performers. So,
are you Team Nicki or Team Cardi?
I'm definitely not Team Nicki at all.
Yeah.
Because I just feel as though she wasn't really genuine. I know what she represented to the culture. I know that her ability for people to feel like the relatability factor is a huge attraction to her. But also remember that she's also the only option. And as a woman rapper who's successful, I mean, if you're the only thing that's presented on the menu, everybody's gonna pick you. Everyone's gonna want you to win. Everyone's gonna want you to succeed.
Right.
So I just feel as though by default, she was able to garner the following because, once again, there was nobody else doing what she was doing. And I mean that in both juxtaposition to her being the only option, but at the same time, she's the only thing that's presented to you. Yeah. And that's a problem. So Team Cardi, not because of the talent, I'll say, but the story.
For sure.
The story is special.
I completely agree with that. So Nicki's exact quote when she said that, you know, she never saw Cardi show her any genuine love, Nicki Minaj says, "I really fully supported her. And up until I seen this recent interview, I had never seen her show me genuine love in an interview. I can just imagine how many girls wish they could have been on a song with Nicki Minaj. I'm not saying it in a cocky way." Okay, girl.
Yeah, so basically, Nicki went on Hot 97, and she was there to kind of hash it out with Funk, with Flex, because they have a history of, you know, Flex really holding her to a certain level and standard, and when she didn't meet that, obviously he shouldn't have been the person to say what her standard should or shouldn't be, but he took that role, and you know they've had it out for each other for the past couple of years, so they kind of made up. And in that process, she took that time to also clear the air. And she also not only did that, but she also threw Safari under the bus, which is like one of the funniest moments of 2018 for me. When she was, I remember she was like, she called her boy 7-Up. She called 7-Up, and 7-Up basically said, she was like, "Yeah, like you remember, like," he was like, "I used to write all of Safari's raps. And like, not only did I write his raps, he used to dig my shits out of the trash." And I was like, yo, such an ether moment for me. And I just wish she had that same energy with Remy, but I'm just saying.
For me, it was when she said she played for his hair replacement surgery. That was my
For me, it was like, when he went and got the dildo sponsor. Because he got his own dildo coming out. He about to be type of billionaire. Because you never know how much he about to make from that. Because he had a nice little controversy with that.
Obviously, so obviously, Nicki and Cardi go back and forth. Nicki is on Queen Radio every day being a hater, you know. Cardi is trying her best, but eventually she snaps and posts 9 Instagram videos going in with receipts on Nicki Minaj. Now, I'm receipts. Team Bardi all the way, because, and not because of talent. I don't listen to Cardi B, / it's always on, right? Like, but Cardi B's story to me is so inspiring. Like, her work hard, her willingness to just do whatever it takes, that's really inspiring to me. And I think that it's important that people who are like kind of unapologetically themselves and do whatever they have to do get rewarded with good things in this life. It's important to see that sometimes just being yourself and doing what you have to do can bring you success. And so I love Cardi for that. So she released, it was 10 Instagram videos that Cardi did. And I saw those myself on the day of, where Cardi addresses almost everything that Nicki Minaj has said on Queen Radio, including, you know, deals that she got before Nicki Minaj. Even people who are part of brands who Nicki Minaj had offered them a deal came and said, "Why are you lying, Nicki Minaj?" So she did her fair share of lying. And my question is, why is Nicki hating? You know, Queen Latifah made a comment on it and said, you know, when we were rappers, it was like you could all jump on each other's records. We were like a family. And she hates that it's just, there can only be one of us. Why has Nicki adopted that kind of, why did she become a villain?
She never got introduced to unity. It's amazing that you brought up Latifah.
UNITY.
Because she never got introduced to that. She came into this with... It was just giving, like, she, not given to her, it was just an open slot, really.
There was nobody else that was
And it was a demand for it, too. Everybody's looking like, where's the woman at? Where's the woman at? She came in, she's sexy, she's beautiful, she's getting rep by a lot of successful men in hip-hop. Lil Wayne at the time, Drake at the time.
Validation.
You know what I'm saying? She got a lot of good credentials. And on top of that, the drama is also selling her stuff right now. So it's kind of like, I either sit back and just be humble and nice and broke, possibly, or stagnant, or I light the candle up under somebody's ass and let the money come in too, and some attention. You know, it's kind of survival right now for her.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I think that's a great point. I think Nicki, obviously, she felt threatened. She felt like her spot was threatened because, as Kara said, like, she came into the game with this, there can only be one Highlander mentality. And now she sees another artist becoming, rising right in front of her. And she, it is in her best interest to stymie that as much as possible, to kind of stamp it out or to throw some type of shade on it, you know, because at the same time, you know, this person, whether she lifts her up or not, is going to eventually take her spot. And women and men and human, not even gender, but humans in general have an issue with being obsolete. You know, like, everyone finds their art to be, or their craft to be, indigenous to them and important and immensely, you know, a major part of their life. So for that time period to come where people don't want you for what you are so passionate about anymore, if you're a basketball player, football player, and nobody wants to see you play anymore, or your body is not able to keep up with the level of your expectations, that's tough. So now her brand and her craft has been questioned her entire career. Yeah. And now her stardom is under fire as well. She had a reaction.
And you need a hug, boo.
And I think it's her, and also her thirst to be some sort of Shiro, you know? But she turned into the antagonist Shiro.
Yeah.
Like, she's an antagonizer. Like, she looks for the trouble, pokes at it, takes the risk, and with the confidence that, yo, I'm still going to win in all of this. Somewhere, I'm going to win. I'm still going to either have my fans that are die hard, that are not going anywhere. Her fans are strong. She still has a strong fan base. Yeah, but I do see that if she doesn't, she needs to do a revamp, though. A revamp is definitely, like, you know, she did fire some people last year. I think she needs to continue to fire people and rehire, because don't just stop at the beauty image part. Like, start with something else.
And speaking of, you know, rebranding, can we save Kanye West? This nigga has had the 2018 from hell. Like, let me tell you, Kanye West, I think, is one of the most revolutionary artists to touch hip-hop in a long time. And this year, seeing his, not even this year, but over the past few years, just seeing his decline has been like, really hard for me, because Kanye West made me listen to rap again. Like, rap isn't lady friendly, and, like, it's very hard to listen to that shit. Like, holy fuck, going back to listen to Biggie, I'm just like, wow, y'all really saying this about women on a record that's mad popular, you know? But Kanye West made me like rap again, and, like, 2003, 2004, and now to see what happens when you just don't have enough people who care about you in your corner. Can we save him?
I don't think so. I really say ultimately no, because at the end of the day, a person can only save themselves. Like, you can't save anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, only they can save themselves. That's one. Two, I feel you with women in hip hop and just the understanding of it and the origins of it too.
Right.
It can be very just different worlds in a sense yeah. when it comes to certain artists. And for me, Kanye wasn't that artist for me, but Common was. So shout out to Chi-Town. It's something about Chi-Town, yeah. I guess. Good and the bad.
yeah. But you don't think we can yeah. save him?
I don't think we can. I think it's up to Kanye. Because Kanye, for one, he dictates who comes in and out of his life, what he does, and if he wants to take his meds or not today or tomorrow. Like, that's really what it is. And I think that he needs to want to be healthy for himself and for his family. His legacy.
Nah, I don't think so. I believe that he's done a lot. I think his legacy is damaged. I think that people will begin to do more of a critical analysis of his contributions to the game. I think that what he's done right now has undermined what he's done in the past, because this affects how we view his George Bush doesn't like black
completely.
People.
Completely. This completely
zeros it out. It's almost as if like it happened, but like
it doesn't zero it out. It puts it in context, I think. Because I used to think that was really profound when he said George Bush doesn't care about black people. But now these outbursts that he has, they've been contextualized. This is just something. Kanye West is not meant to be a famous person. He is not, has never handled it well.
I think that Kanye has to, I don't know what culture he can immerse himself or baptize himself in to come out, because he was already in the African-American culture already. He already kind of nestled himself within the bosom of our culture, and you betrayed us. We feel like you betrayed us.
I feel some very people, betrayed.
Some people feel like that's who he is, and that like he's like a megaphone. And the only thing that we are upset about is that his voice is not being used against us. When he was using it against people that we felt he should be using it against, it was all good. And we were co-signing his antics, and we were cool with his outburst, and all of that was fine and dandy, because we kind of coded it in this, well, we need a voice. We need to have somebody that comes out and speaks up. And he did that, and he filled that gap for us. But now that same skill set is being turned against us, whether it be due to mental health or
Turned against him
turned against him as well too. But I'm not sure if we're able to reverse the clock again. It's tough. It's like a relationship. He cheated on us, and now he's trying to come back.
How dare you? Yay.
And what Kanye needs to remember is, if you're not cool to us, you're not cool to them.
It's that's a lie, actually.
You don't think so?
It's like, a lie. Because
if we deem it not cool, I feel like they kind of
it's all about that white adjacency again. So here's the thing about what happens with white adjacency. Since Kanye is black and is accepted in the black community, white people then consider him a voice for the black community, just like R. Kelly. So keep that shit in mind. It works the same fucking way. They think that we accept him, and so his voice, he does speak for us, to white people, because they're not listening to us. They're listening to Kanye West. They're listening to R. Kelly. So is it still about the music, hip hop?
I mean, absolutely, to a certain degree. It's not 100%. But, you know, was it ever? There's always like a business side. There's always the capitalistic side of our music industry is what drives a lot of the fuckery that we see that's going on right now. From the user-generated beefs to the, you know, even social media, people love to argue all the time. And hip-hop has really become more of a landing pad for controversy. People just begin to take whatever their thought process is on their music, and they use that to kind of judge people. Like, people are judged based on their hip-hop choices.
Definitely.
Who you listen to, who's your top five. And you become ridiculed.
Drake is in their top five.
Right. There's a certain level of judgment. Canceled. You're canceled. Like, your opinion is null and void, right?
I'm just like, I don't like you now.
Right. And that just says a lot. It's creeping. Yeah. It's creeping more and more into, it's almost like a religion.
Who should we be looking out for in hip hop? Top three, go.
Young Thug, Gold Link. J. Cole.
Okay. Repeat the question one more time.
Who should we look out for 2019 in hip-hop?
Oh, shit. Even though she's not a hip-hop artist, I have to say Rihanna, just because of the transition in music.
Boo, she doesn't count. Damn. Answer the question.
All right, okay.
Hip-hop only.
Buzz me.
Buzzed you, yo.
All right, okay, okay. J. Cole. J-Rock.
Okay.
And for some reason, I want to say Meek again. I want to say Meek.
Meek's not dropping that shit.
Nothing? You don't think?
He's not dropping shit.
You don't think
he's
so?
He's gonna ride this shit.
I feel like because this one was so short. I feel like
it was 19 songs. That's too long.
You know, you're right. You're right. You're right.
Drake being, I mean, like.
Can I take Meek away then?
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking about something else. I'm thinking about the one right before the album. That's what I was thinking about real quick.
Oh, the EP?
And I'm a little drunk. So let's take Meek out and let's throw in. I feel like Migos is trying to do a comeback.
All right.
Because they all try to do that three thing, the separate shit, and it just didn't work.
Yeah. All right, so it's time for the white wine portion of the podcast. A she mad moment in white current events where white people are caught once again hating, whiting, calling the cops on us for breathing, or straight up giving a nigga a hard time. What white person made you maddest? What white person surprised you? What white didn't? What did y'all bring to the table today?
Oh man, a white person that surprised me. White people don't surprise me.
That's a word.
They don't. There's nothing that they do that's worth exalting. Mm. I just feel like at the end of the day, it's like back taxes.
Mediocrity.
You know, I don't really see it. I mean, they float very well through our society while being quite average, and I can get that. What white person disappointed me? Probably all of them.
Every day.
In some way, shape, or form.
Here's going to you, Lady Gaga. Why didn't you say anything about R. Kelly?
Yeah, I mean, like, at the end of the day, you know, you didn't see anybody white on that documentary. You didn't see any record executives or people that signed those checks that gave him the money to facilitate his ability to empower, to you know, take abuse, to, you know, force that kind of abuse on these young ladies. So those are probably the individuals that disappointed me this week. Enablers.
Well, I have one. If it wasn't for this morning, I probably would have been more on the who disappointed me side. And also, I'm trying to manage my anxiety. So I'm going to go the good route. Oh, and who surprised me in a good way?
Oh, that's good. Sometimes we do have stories.
Yeah, and it's really genuine. I think it's going to surprise you
in a good way.
Somebody followed me on, I'm a social media manager as well, so on one of my pages, and it's called The Fragile White Girl. And she's a white girl's attempt to dismantle her lack of racial education and awareness. So she's on her Elliot, what's her name? Jane Elliott wave.
Yes, I love Auntie Jane Elliott. She's not my auntie. She's some white person's auntie. I do like her.
I love that.
She's your adopted auntie.
No. I would never let a white person
adopt you.
No, you're adopting her.
You'll say no, thank you.
No, I don't adopt white people. But she can be like my mama's friend who is white.
Mm-hmm.
Who I like.
Yeah. And I just thought it was amazing that somebody today on social media dedicated their time and a portion of their life to dismantle just racism with their people.
Yes, because like, that's her page who should is be
targeting
doing it.
Her people. Her page is not targeting us.
She said, it's not saying, I'm going to teach my white folks to not be racist because I'm tired of them asking black people to do it. Thank you, Jane.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Nah, it's Fragile White Girl on Instagram.
Thank you, at Fragile White Girl on Instagram. We appreciate your contribution to helping dismantle white supremacy in your own neighborhoods.
I do know a Fragile White Girl in real life, though.
I don't hang around those types.
No, and, but honey, I want to shout her out. Her name is Gina. She's a regular girl I met in college.
Is she trying to learn better, though?
Yes. Actually, because in college, I was sitting with her and her boyfriend in the car. We were driving to Dunkin' Donuts. Mm. And he was singing a song. And he decided to say the word nigga. And I had to check him.
You must.
And she was with me in the checking. And I appreciated her on that. Gina, and she dumped him.
You get some applause from me, Gina, for doing the work of what someone who's trying to be a good white person would do. I want to thank my guest, Miss Kiera Leon and Cozy, for joining me today. Tell me, where can we find y'all?
At Kiera Leon, like the country, but with a K, one underscore at the end.
Connect with me at Comfy Cozy, my personal page. We release new episodes of Run the Tape every week, every Friday. You connect with us on social media at Run the Tape Pod. And if you want to support the show after listening to Black Friends Dinner, connect with us. If you want to support, we are on Patreon, www.patreon.com/Run the Tape. Look forward to hearing you listen to us. Let's connect.
Thank you. Black Friends Dinner is produced by myself, Nandi K, and Sean Dawson. Audio by Sean Dawson. Opening music by Leonidas.